Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Getting you guys ready for the Seahawks Sunday Night Football against the Steelers. It's Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. He's on with us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Bump, what's up?
What's up, guys? How we doing?
Bump, have you ever seen the show Love is Blind on Netflix?
Love is Blind. No, I feel like I have, but I don't remember the specifics.
No, Bump, if you have seen it, you would remember it. So I know
it's
you haven't seen it.
Something that sticks with you forever.
You and your wife definitely need to catch up on it and watch it. I promise. You guys will enjoy
it. Okay.
I'm going to switch gears now. We'll explain later why we're talking about it, but Bump hasn't seen
There's
it. So.
It's very important, and we'll reveal why. But
First of all, Bump, if you're looking at anyone outside of Geno Smith, either offense or defense, who really, really needs to step up in this one to get the win for Seattle?
Offense or defense, man. I'm going to say Daryl Taylor. And the reason why I'm going to say Daryl Taylor is because Big Ben is going to be a statue out there. You know, he's never been the most mobile guy, and he's an older statesman now. And Daryl Taylor just has shown that, look, I can beat guys one-on-one and get after the quarterback. And I really feel like if the Hawks do that this weekend, you could walk out of Heinz Field with a win.
Now, Bump, I'm going to, since you picked defense, I'm gonna stress you here, and I'm going to say, all right, if you could say the same thing about anybody that needs to step up offensively, who is that going to be in your mind?
It's got to be a guy on the outside, and that's DK. You know, he is showing that he's the number one receiver. I mean, we've always known that he's had this type of potential, right? But now I feel like week after week, we're still seeing it, even in losses. And then as a quarterback, you have to be able to throw the ball down the field. I think the offense is going to change a bit, but they're still going to give Geno opportunities to get the ball down the field. And if you're not, you're underneath to the tight end and to guys like DK and Lockett. So I'm leaning on 14, man. I think 14 is going to step up and have a good one.
Bump, how important is this run game this weekend?
Extremely, right? You're dealing with a backup quarterback, you know, a guy that you can't just say, go out and win this game for us like he can do with Russell Wilson. Geno Smith is a good quarterback, but as you know, Jake, how do you help a quarterback out, especially a guy who hasn't played in a while? You run the football, you loosen things up and get some play action off of that. You just make the game a lot easier for him to see. So it's huge, man. So we'll see with 32, if 32 is back there or if Collins back there, whoever's back there, man, they got to get done.
Now, are you anticipating one question to keep seeing? Just more of a passing game maybe in this one if you can't get it going. I know that that's easier said than done because if you're two-dimensional and a team knows what you're going to be doing, I guess one-dimensional in this case, and a defense knows what you're going to be doing, then it's not so easy to throw the ball all over the field. But I think, I wonder, Bump, if people are anticipating less of a pass game than we'll see on Sunday. What do you think?
Everyone knows that the situation, right? Russell is gone. You got Geno Smith coming in, and everyone really around the football community is going to say the same thing I just said, right? How do you get guys going? You run the football. So teams are going to game plan for that. The thing about running the football is sometimes you just out-execute dudes. You know, sometimes your guys are just really going and getting a push and getting to their assignments, even though the defense has the perfect defense out there. And so if they do get into that situation to where they are running the football a lot, and the team knows that, they can still be successful. But you're right, you have to be balanced, though. You have to take your shot every now and then. But it comes down to execution, man. You can have the right defense or anything.
So, Bump, you look at what the Steelers do defensively. They're a group, I got to be honest with you, that I watch them on film, and they make me extremely nervous. They've got guys at every single level of the field, from the secondary, the linebackers, to, you know, the defensive line. Who is the guy that you're looking at that stresses you out as the Seattle Seahawks roll into town on Sunday night?
You know you got to go to that D-line. That last name, Watt, means something, right? I mean, that dude is just – he's got a motor, and he just goes. And he's going to be able to make plays and put pressure on Geno Smith. A guy like that, you don't go into a game and expect him not to make a play, right? He is going – to get his. And I think when you're dealing with, again, a backup quarterback, a guy who hasn't played for a while, the more pressure you can get, the better, and he'll do that.
Hey, why do you think this offense, and this isn't just limited to this game, but have you been surprised, Bump, by the lack of usage of tight ends for this offense so far?
Yeah, I have actually. And I think we're on last night, me and Maury were on Hawk Slide, and we were talking to Colby Parkinson, and we're looking up stuff, and the tight ends have been targeted, I believe, like 15% of the plays this year. Last year, they ended the year with 19%. Now, I know that's like a numbers game, right? You can't really look at the numbers to see how the offense is using them, but they don't seem like a focal point. But again, in this situation, I think they are going to be a focal point, or they should this week, because you're going to look for a lot of underneath stuff right now just to get Geno going. And you got to remember Gerald Everett was hurt, you know, for a couple weeks. Dissy was out there by himself. Parkinson just comes back. So we haven't really seen this group play together. Maybe we'll see the production go up in that group.
Bump, there was big news, NFL news, that happened, and also within our own division, that the Arizona Cardinals added Zach Ertz to their lineup, and obviously it was in reaction to the fact that Max Crosby, their tight end this year, has played well, but he is out on IR right now. What do you make of the move? Is it a move that you think is going to be beneficial to them? Does it make them better?
Man, someone texted me early in the morning with that, and my response to them, no joke, was like, the rich get richer. I'm like, goodness gracious, like, that's just another weapon for these guys. Now, he might not be the Ertz that, you know, we've seen the past few years, but it just makes them more dynamic. Why not have a good tight end? You already have a couple good receivers. You have a backfield that's getting it done. It all comes down to Kyler Murray, really. You know, is he going to be able to use them? You know, what's the offense going to look like with this guy? How do you implement him? But, yeah, man, it looks good on paper, but you know how it goes. You got to make it work on the field.
Hey, Bump, I have one question that is not Seahawks-related to fit into this. First of all, congratulations on your Dodgers, lifelong Dodgers fan.
Thank you. For
getting to the NLCS.
Wait.
Bump. Bump,
yeah,
my guy.
That was
did Wilmer go?
Oh, man, he was good, man. I will appreciate the win. But you even look at the batter. Like, he put his head down. It's like, there's no way they're going to say I went there. So, yeah, it sucks for them, but I'll take it.
Definitely will take it. Bump, you know, you're talking about a situation where, for the Seahawks right now, yes, they have three games that are winnable. There's no doubt about it. Their back is against the wall in terms of their playoff hopes, their playoff chances in order to keep this thing alive. How pivotal is it for this group to show that they can step up in this moment offensively, defensively, even without Russell Wilson?
Yeah, these are three big games, man. I mean, you're 2-3 right now. You can get out of this thing 5-3. I think if they can get two out of these three, they're in good shape. It's all about weathering the storm right now, right? Because theoretically, you can have Russell back after these three games, after that bye week, and you can be good to go. Anyone else who's banged up, they get through this situation right here. You got a bye week, you're good to go. And you're optimistic because Geno showed that he can put some drives together. So this is huge, man. This is I think this will determine the result of the season, honestly, because you get down in the loss column. Teams are playing well. You see the Cardinals, they're the only undefeated team left in the league. You got the Rams up top. I mean, the Niners and the Hawks are at the bottom of the division right now. I didn't see that coming. So, yeah, this is huge. Weather the storm. I say get two out of three of these things, and you might be okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not the power structure or standings that I saw in the NFC West heading into the season. But it is what it is. It's been interesting to watch. What did you make of the Cardinals' acquisition of Zach Ertz?
Good pickup. You know, I like it. I think that it makes them more dynamic. You got a tight end now. You got a couple of receivers. More weapons for Kyler Murray, the better.
Bump, as you're talking about this group for the Seahawks, I think that when we're talking about these pivotal weeks, as you had just mentioned, you know, when it comes down to it, it is also the other side of it, obviously, to keep their playoff hopes alive and the opportunity to go 5-3 here. On the other side of it, it really is another aspect of it of how quickly this thing can turn in terms of the conversation in this town of not just this year, but where things are going to go after that. What is your, if you could predict, if they went 1-2, what does the conversation look like?
Conversation, you're talking about just the future of the organization. They lose, if this stretch doesn't go well, the season doesn't go well, those are conversations every team has when they're not successful. It's not just limited for the Seahawks in their situation. You know, any team in the league, if you're losing, things aren't clicking, you think about reevaluating and how to move things around and how to make things better. And that's the same conversation the Seahawks will have after this game. The specifics of it, you know, who knows? You know, we can speculate all we want to, but yeah, if things go bad, there are going to be some conversations during the offseason.
Hey, looking around just the rest of the NFL while we have you in the couple minutes here, what have been some of your most fascinating teams to watch? Like, I can't get enough right now of obviously Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. That last game was fantastic. But, like, yeah. Brandon Staley and the Chargers are really fascinating to me. I really liked his last press conference talking about Gruden's comments. I liked how bold he is on third and fourth down. I don't know. They're fun to watch. Who have you been keeping your eye on?
You know, it's kind of messed up because I just want to see how these guys respond. But I've been looking at the Chiefs, man, because they've been the team of the future. You know, they have Patrick Mahomes who does all these amazing things. You got Tyreek Hill, and they've had so much success. So I'm interested in watching just how Andy Reid and those guys kind of climb out of it because I think they can. And I appreciate that part about football, about guys fixing things and trying to get things better because people don't understand how much of a grind that is, man. It's not as easy as just throwing a couple of plays and you're in there. There's a lot of stuff going on, so I'm interested to see just how they respond because I'm sure they will.
Bum, how confident are you that the Seahawks defense gets things turned around?
Man, I'm confident because of what's coming up. You know, I think that these are three teams that can allow these guys to get things right. You know, this week you still got Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool who are going to stretch the field. But every week I feel like the matchup is there's more of a level playing field for them to try to get things right, to work on things and find themselves. So we'll see, man. It's week by week. Right now I think this is a game that they could win. I think they could lose. I think this is an opportunity for the defense to really turn the corner and say, look, offense, we know you're in a situation. Let us lead the charge.
Now, if they do end up figuring it out, what is going to be the main factor as to why?
Guys is doing their jobs, man. You watch the film and guys are out of place or there's no communication or, you know, guys aren't trusting that the other guy is gonna get it done. It's mowing your own grass is what my guy Jay Collins said. He used to play with the Saints. And he said, Drew Brees said that. Actually, it was mow your own lawn. You know, guys got to mow their lawn. And you know what I'm saying? It's part of HOAs here on an offense and a defense. So take care of your stuff. And I think it just comes down to that.
He is Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. Make sure you tune in before and after every single Seahawks game. He's steering the ship over there. Also, lots of great analysis, as always, including when he's on with us on Fridays. Thanks, Bump.
Take care, guys. Have a good one.
You too. All right, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Kraken notched their first ever victory in franchise history on Thursday night, winning 4-3 against the Nashville Predators. What is the real headline?
I mean, the headline is they got their first win, and they were playing in a way that we thought would showcase their strengths. Fantastic. My real headline and what I was waiting for is the Kraken got their first fight in franchise history. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted to know. Yeah, who's going to score the first goal, which obviously we saw against Vegas, but who's going to throw the first punch? That's what I wanted to know.
There's some fan fights going on, too, apparently.
Oh, my God. Did you guys see that video?
Yes.
I know you two did. I don't know if any listeners did.
I don't know, but go to social media. Check it out. This is honestly one of the worst things that I've seen that has continued to pop up.
Can you explain what it is? Because the video I saw was taken mid-fight when a Nashville Predators fan was like pummeling a Kraken fan.
Yeah, but
Kraken
but
fan.
You,
I didn't see the beginning.
You see, there's another video of a different angle, and the Kraken fan is getting the better of the Nashville fan, and then it kind of goes back and forth. Anyways, it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. And these fights that we're seeing happening in stadiums amongst fans is something that is driving me bonkers. I know that there's people out there that look at it, enjoy it. I don't know how you do. This is something that I continue to see, and I really, really don't like it. And I wish that there was some way that you can't perfectly police this, but I wish there was a harsher punishment that teams can give to try and calm this stuff down, because it just ruins, honestly, it ruins the experience. What if there was a kid? What if there was a parent with a kid in the midst of that? Right? Now, I mean, just like, come on, guys.
I joke about fights a lot and about wanting to see one, and it's a different culture in hockey, but I'm looking at the video of the fight right now between these two. It's pretty over the top. Like, lots of punches being thrown, and it's like, man, imagine if you were there with your, like, 8-year-old. And this person's just like, why are these two grown men trying to beat
each other
up?
Also, imagine how dumb you sound trash-talking a Kraken fan. They have
right?
one game to go
what
off
What are you
going to
say? Yeah, you guys are losers. You've never won a game. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what you could say. I don't know, but obviously there were some choice words, and it was settled with the fists. That's very clear here.
Headline rewrites.
Headline at number 2, trade this morning in the NFL. Cardinals dealing a 5th-round pick in next year's draft to the Eagles for tight end Zach Ertz. What's the real headline?
The Eagles traded Zach Ertz to the Cards for that 5th-round pick, plus a backup cornerback, to which the Seahawks asked, are you going to use that? You could always use late-round picks.
Because we could really use
corners.
It.
Just eyeing their leftovers.
Yeah, just, hey, are you gonna eat that? It's the same energy. Are you gonna use that backup cornerback?
Oh, I hate this, but it's so true. You know, when you're talking about where the Cardinals are at right now, I'm envious because they're in a situation where, you know, honestly, it's reminiscent of where the Seahawks were when they were very much alive in their Super Bowl runs, and you know, it felt like they were adding to what they were doing, not in desperation mode. And I think for the Arizona Cardinals, they see their opportunity right now being the only undefeated team in the NFL currently, and looking at their opportunity not just in the NFC West, but also the NFL or the entire NFC, and they've got a chance. And so this is a great opportunity to snag Zach Ertz for basically nothing, to have a dynamic playmaker as a tight end. He's not the player that he once was, but still a very good receiving tight end in this league that complements what Kyler Murray already has as a third down weapon, as someone that can take the middle of the field. And I think this is a great get for the Arizona Cardinals.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number 3, we talked about it with Bump and on the timeline, but the Dodgers survived the Giants in Game 5 with a little help to a controversial strike 3 call on the game's final pitch. What is the real headline?
Shout out to this series, which is great, for forcing a Game 5 so we can continue to delay the inevitable. An Astros, Dodgers,
no.
World Ooh. Series.
No, no,
I'd like to
no.
issue a complaint. I'd like to send a strongly worded email. ESPN Los Angeles, which obviously is covering the Dodgers. They had Steve Mason, who's an ESPN radio host. A lot of you know that. He tweeted out a picture, hashtag Dodgers. That's all it said, with a picture of Ted Lasso pointing up to the Believe sign. And I would like to file a complaint. Now,
100%.
Hang on a minute. I don't know how the Mariners got away with using a lot of the Believe stuff from the Ted Lasso. Like, I don't know how you... That didn't become like a legal thing. But I also think Ted Lasso, like the actual Ted Lasso account responded, were clearly down with it, in part because they were the plucky Mariners. They were this team you could never count out. No one expected to be there. They were supposed to lose 92 games and instead won 90 games. They had a season that truly, truly no one believed in until you found yourself in the middle of it thinking, is this really happening? The Dodgers, who outspend every other club.
They've been to 3 of the last 4 World Series.
You do not get to come in here and pretend that no one's believing in you. And isn't it fun to get everyone to believe that something here could be special? You are not the underdog just because you didn't get as many wins as the Giants. You're the Dodgers. I hate this so much. Get your own thing. I know that technically...
Exactly.
I know technically the Mariners got Ted Lasso's thing, but it made sense.
What are you talking about? They were the first organization to go after the Ted Lasso
I'm
thing.
I'm saying that the Dodgers in Ted Lasso world are Man City, not Richmond.
Yes, exactly. And also, Scott Service's dad energy is very much like Ted Lasso. It fits perfectly here. I'm 100% with you. Go get your own thing, and I hope that every single Mariners fan, go on Twitter, light this thing up, light this guy up, and quote tweet the heck out of it.
He seems like a nice man.
I don't care.
It is
Jake
really...
This is ours.
After this
go
guy.
Get your own thing.
Well, it's really lame. I just like... How do you not see that there's a difference?
Well, it's like...
You're not the underdog. I hate to tell you, like... You are the evil empire. You are not like Luke Skywalker. You don't get to be the plucky underdog everyone gets to root for. I mean, the benefit of that is that you have like an incredible roster. You've spent a ton of money. You're in the NLCS. Like, congratulations. That's what you did. But you don't get to pretend. It's like the Astros pretending that, oh, people are doubting we could get back here. No one's doubting you can get back there. We just don't like you.
I can't wait for Astros fans to
if the Astros
make the World Series, we'll be like,
if that happens, we will riot.
Said we could be here.
Throw up.
God.
I will absolutely throw up, and I will be so mad at Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred, as I already am. But to allow them to have that moment potentially is disgusting. It disgusts me, and that's why I am the biggest Red Sox fan you've ever seen for the next series, and I hate it so much,
now,
but that's a position that you've put me in.
Do we think that maybe he's using it sarcastically?
No.
No. God, no.
He's not. We positive he's not using it sarcastically?
Yes, we are positive.
Self-awareness at a zero.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I know Dodgers fans were complaining halfway through the season that they were disappointed with their team, but...
Yeah, it was unacceptable for them to lose a series in the middle of the season. Yeah,
part of me thinks he might be joking. I can't tell you.
How could they finish with less than 105 wins in the regular season?
That's unacceptable. Disgusting. Just absolutely unacceptable.
All right. Let's figure out what I'm doing here.
Stacey, why'd you have to get me so
mad? We got NFL
headlines.
Sorry, we have NFL headlines. Also, I want you guys to think of your answer to this question. Jake and I will talk about it at 12:45, and then we're going to open up phone lines. Who needs to step up in Russell Wilson's absence to beat the Steelers on Sunday? Who needs to have a game if the Seahawks are going to beat Pittsburgh? Your calls at 1 p.m. I'll give you that number later in the show. Jake and I are also going to talk about it. First, though, we'll look around the rest of the NFL with NFL headlines next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, I'm going to start with the biggest story, at least in the NFC West today. The Cardinals acquire longtime Eagles tight end Zach Ertz for a fifth-round pick and a rookie cornerback, Tay Gowan, I think. How dangerous, if dangerous at all, does Ertz make Kyler Murray in the Cardinals' offense, Jake?
Here's the thing. I don't think it takes the offense to a whole nother level. Like, Zach Ertz is going to come in, and it's just going to make this group so much more dynamic because Zach Ertz is kind of on the last legs of his career. But in terms of an upgrade, I mean, Max Williams was doing a great job at tight end for the Cardinals, but I think Zach Ertz is better. So it is an upgrade there. It's a great complement to what you already have going on with Chase Edmonds and DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green and Christian Kirk. I mean, they've got a really good thing going on there right now offensively, and if I could have picked any landing spot for Zach Ertz, the Cardinals would have been one of my top choices if I'm him personally. So this is a really good situation that Zach Ertz is landing into. And guess what, Stacey? Their offense doesn't have the issue of square peg, round hole, okay? They're not going to take a Jimmy Graham and try to make him an inline tight end and block.
Best tight end in
the They are going to accept him for who he is, and it's gonna marry very well and mesh very well with what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do, and that's have a true receiving tight end, and that's ultimately what Zach Ertz is.
Former Seahawks and 49ers cornerback and current Tampa Bay Buccaneers cornerback Richard Sherman is expected to miss a couple of weeks, potentially, due to a hamstring injury he suffered Thursday night in the Bucs' 28-22 win over the Eagles. He's going under an MRI today. I haven't seen an update from that, though the expectation right now from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport is that he could miss some time, though he is not expected to have suffered a season-ending injury. And I gotta say, you consider that he was not, presumably, not as a dig in football shape. He wasn't on a team. He wasn't in a training camp. Was thrown into starter action as a starter and then plays a Sunday game, then a Thursday game. I mean, that's a lot of action in a short week.
Yeah, it is. And he mentioned that as such that, hey, I put my body through a lot. I asked a lot of my body, and my body just, look, it wasn't necessarily ready. So this isn't necessarily a surprise. This is also part of the concern for Richard Sherman. This was the concern for a lot of the other teams out there, a concern for the Seattle Seahawks, and a reason why they didn't go into it. But he's not going to be out for an extended period of time. They feel like they don't need to put him on IR, that he could come back after a couple weeks. And so is this the biggest setback in the world? No. And I anticipate that he'll be just fine when he returns. So we'll see if it's something that turns into a nagging thing that keeps him out for an extended period of time. I don't anticipate that being the case, but
Yeah, I mean, they threw him in a pretty tough situation for somebody, as you mentioned, that has not gotten into playoff shape. He had literally just a couple days of practice before he goes out and plays his first game with the Bucks. So it was an incredible thing that he was being asked to do and was doing just fine. So long story short, Richard Sherman's still going to be a part of the Bucks run, and he's still going to be a big contributor for them as they've dealt with some pretty significant injuries to their secondary.
All right, some other injury updates here from around the league. Important news for those of you playing fantasy football, which I know is a lot of you. Wide receiver Jarvis Landry has been designated to return from the IR for the Cleveland Browns. I'm going to read a couple of these, Jake, and then I'll let you react to some of them. Meanwhile, the Browns have ruled out Nick Chubb against the Arizona Cardinals, so I do want to hear whether or not you think without Chubb, and so I don't know if they'll have Landry activated in time, but he is going to be activated. Unclear whether or not he'll be in this game. They will not have Chubb. Can Cleveland still upset the Cards?
Absolutely they can. Why? Because they still have a really good running back group, and they've got Kareem Hunt right behind him. So is it Nick Chubb? No. Are you going to miss him? Absolutely. But guess what? Kareem Hunt, you want to know what his stats are, Stacey? So Nick Chubb is averaging 5.8 yards per carry, is 4 touchdowns on the season. Kareem Hunt has 295 yards, so he's averaging 5.4 yards per carry and has one more touchdown than Nick Chubb. So I think they'll be doing just fine without him, and the running game will still be alive. And plus, Hunt is already a pretty active participant in their passing game, having 17 receptions for 149 yards. So they'll still be able to be very dynamic, and if they can get Landry back into the offense in time for this game, I think that they'll be just fine and still have all the offensive firepower they need to win.
Now, I know that Seahawks fans may not love any compliments about other NFC teams, especially not when it's the Cowboys, that pesky Jerry Jones. No one likes him, but I'm going to go ahead and file this under, like, kind of good news, just as a football fan, that Trevon Diggs will be, quote, ready to go against New England. He hadn't practiced at all this week. He's had a phenomenal season.
Yeah, he has. Right now he's on pace far and away to be defensive player of the year. The other guy that you could look at, though, is Myles Garrett.
I was just going to ask, reading
his stats to Curtis yesterday. He has 7 sacks already. 7. He's got 8 tackles for loss. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd what he has done so far this season. So we'll be able to see. We'll see if he keeps up the pace. But yeah, I mean, Trevon Diggs has been really, really good. And I really believe that when you're looking at the Dallas Cowboys, they haven't been perfect defensively. They're still having their own struggles and their own issues at times. But, you know, as we've talked about with the Seattle Seahawks, Stace, if they can at least generate turnovers, which is what Trevon Diggs is doing, you steal possessions and you give your offense an opportunity to capitalize on an extra possession. And that's how they've been able to win games so far, with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott and that offense really rolling at the current moment.
Also some news for fantasy football owners. I don't know if you were expecting him to be back this week. I know that the anticipation was he good, but Christian McCaffrey will be out.
That's a big blow to the Panthers, who are trying to get right, who are trying to bounce back after two losses against the Cowboys and the Eagles after starting 3-0. They play the Vikings, and the Vikings are honestly the most volatile team we've ever seen. They have a great offense that can put up points. They can do some great things, but defensively they've been really struggling. The Minnesota Vikings, they were shut down pretty much in the last game against the Lions, and then really struggled against the Browns. So we'll see what ends up happening there, but definitely not ideal if you're a Carolina Panthers fan.
Someone said from the Mac and Jack's text line, "I take great pleasure when at any time anyone says something even slightly critical of Jimmy Graham in front of Stacey. I'll throw in Ann Curtis."
Yeah. Don't you dare.
How dare you?
Don't you dare.
Don't you
besmirch the name of Jimmy Graham.
Shame on you.
You want to know what's crazy?
Shame on all of you.
About Jimmy Graham right now in terms of his contract. He is not even the starter, and he is making bank.
Do you think, in hindsight, he never missed a start in Seattle after suffering that knee injury? In hindsight, did that end up altering his career, or was it just spending his late 20s in Seattle and then turning 30?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just the fact that I've been shocked to see both the Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers use him as a traditional tight end.
And the thing is that I'd be mad about it if I was Jimmy Graham. See, I really am standing right now. He came to Seattle when he was, what, 27?
Yeah.
26, 27?
It, very much still in the prime of his career.
That's what I'm saying. The last half of the prime of your career was spent with two teams that had no idea how to use you.
Correct.
And I don't know how they didn't look at the way that the Saints used him.
He was on a high end trajectory.
Which is crazy.
To be something I'm missing. At one point, it was like him and Gronk.
But that's the thing. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense because he didn't go to places where they were terrible quarterbacks. He went with Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers.
And the Saints knew that he wasn't a pure tight end. They knew right away. They knew that he could barely like run routes effectively. He had 1 year of college football.
Right.
And they were like, well, I don't know. I mean, he's a big guy. Just throw it to him. Let's figure it out. And they ended up doing that all the time. Like, that was their go-to. And it worked because he could beat out any guy on 50-50 balls.
I just really look at it, and I really think it comes down to ultimately Sean Payton and Drew Brees just being willing to go against the norm and accept him for who he was and just say, hey, we're going to go out. We're going to throw conventional wisdom and conventional tight end play out the window, and we're just not even going to mess with it. And that was something that, you know, Daryl Bevel and, quite frankly, at the time, Mike McCarthy just had a really hard time really grasping.
Do you see what you did, Texter? You texted in about Jimmy Graham, and you got me going on this diatribe now. And I won't stop. I have to stop, though. We're against the clock and we have to break. Who needs to step in and step up in Russell Wilson's absence to beat the Steelers on Sunday night? We are going to take your calls at 1. Get your answer ready. Jake and I will answer it first. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I'm having a lot of fun coming up with my quiz questions for our game show today. We do a game show, by the way, ahead of every Seahawks opponent, and it's named after that opponent. It started out 2 years ago when we did Rams ahead of a Thursday night game against the Rams because we couldn't think of a name for the quiz. And now every single week, it is just the opponent name. Steelers is the game show this week. And Jake and Curtis facing off. You two are tied on the season. We had to skip one of them.
We are.
Yeah.
So you guys are 2-2 in a head-to-head.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pivotal week. Absolutely. And the one thing that I cannot wait for is to, you know, at the end of, you know, the intro, Curtis always has a little something at the end of
it's
it.
It's related
each
to
team.
Each team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
in
if
an
it
abstract
was,
way.
If it was Dolphins, he'd have like a little dolphin sound.
Sure.
For Washington football team, you had...
I had somebody listing off the positions of a football team.
I like very abstract. So if you like game shows, if you like trivia, playing along with your friends, anything like that, we're going to have... It's a fun version of a preview. A little something for everyone today. That's coming up at 1:30. Before we get to that, though, we're opening up the phone lines at 1 and taking your calls, and we're going to talk about the question before we open it up to you guys, since I know that some of y'all are going to be disagreeing with our answers, and I want you guys to have the floor and be able to sound off here. So here's the question. Basically, who's got to win this for the Seahawks is the obvious one. Who needs to step up in Russell Wilson's absence to beat the Steelers on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Who needs to play the biggest role in this win?
To me, very clearly, I'm going to point to a group and then I'm going to point to an individual. The group that I think has to step up in this game is the defense. The defense is going to be the reason why you end up having a chance to win this game. And the reason why I say that is because I think the Steelers' defense is really good. So I have a hard time believing and being confident in the fact that the Seahawks can score 24 points. I think this game's going to be much more around the idea of like a 17. The winner is going to score 17 points. That's the type of game I believe it will be. And so with that being said, the Seahawks defense has to play assignment sound. They have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. They have to be more sound in the run game. They have to limit Najee Harris. They have to be able to get pressure on Ben Roethlisberger. And the guy that I want to see be the catalyst to all of that is Jamal Adams. And the way that you do that is by not putting him in the role that they have currently put him in, but throwing it back to 2020 in terms of sending him more in pressure situations. 20 to 25% of the time, allowing him to be around the line of scrimmage more often, where he can be a more disruptive force for you. And in the past, in the last, 5 weeks, what they have done is they have tried to make Jamal Adams more of a traditional safety playing in their cover three scheme, and they are not truly unlocking the playmaking ability of what this guy brings to the table as much as I believe they should.
Yeah, so frame the question as basically who needs to do more than his job right now to win the game? Like, who's got to go above and beyond to win the game? Because it's going to have to fall on someone. When you don't have your starting quarterback, especially when you don't have any starter, when you're missing a couple, but especially when it's the quarterback, someone has to do more than their job. Someone has to go above and beyond. And it's never fair to be asked to do more than your job, but some guys either just have it innately in them as I don't know, like there's like a personality type that makes it all the way and becomes successful in professional sports. Like, you just persevere, you grit it out, you're incredibly competitive. Who's it going to be? Who has to be the guy? I'm seeing a lot of great answers. Again, we're going to open up the phone lines in just a couple of minutes here, but it is hard for me, even though I look at the Steelers' offense and I say, oh, you'd love to get a good pass rush going. You'd love to get someone like Carlos Dunlap involved because, again, I keep pointing to Brooke Pryor, but she had such a fantastic interview and preview with Wyman and Graz was in for Bob. So Wyman and Graz, she was talking to the two of them and said, look, this game is going to be won or lost with the Steelers' offensive line. The defense is what it is. They're solid. They've had some mistakes, but they're not losing you this game. It will be win or lost. Won or lost, depending on whether or not the offensive line for the Steelers can protect Ben Roethlisberger and can help them establish the run. If Harris can't get anything done and Ben is forced to throw it, he will make mistakes. He will underthrow and overthrow and be inaccurate. He doesn't have the arm or I don't want to say athleticism. He was never like a big runner.
But he was very mobile. He was tough to take down.
That's important. He isn't what he was, and that becomes very, very obvious. It's almost like last year there was a stat going around where Brady, of all starting quarterbacks, I mean, look, he's the best to ever do it, but of all starting quarterbacks, had the biggest discrepancy, the biggest difference between his quarterback rating when under pressure and when not pressured. So I think that there are some guys who defy their age and play for a long time, but it shows up at certain moments. And for older quarterbacks, I feel like it's often when they're pressured. Like, you can't react as quickly as you used to.
Yeah. No, I agree. So who are you pinning that on?
Also, this is what I'm saying. Initially, I was looking at the pass rush, and I was saying, it's got to fall on the pass rush. You have to get it done. But it's hard for me to not immediately look to two leaders on defense, Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner. It's really hard for me to overlook the two of those guys and not think, it's got to be you. It has to be you. Speaking of Ted Lasso, it's like the Roy Kent thing. It has to be you. It just has to be.
The other thing that you could point to as well is the fact that, hey, this is Geno. Geno, you're replacing Russell Wilson. You have to perform the way that you did against the Rams that everybody just fell in love with and was like, oh my gosh, look at Geno Smith, 98-yard touchdown and 98-yard touchdown scoring drive, and you need to be that guy. You need to play at that level in order for this team to win. I think that's unfair to have those expectations, but some people do. So Geno Smith is definitely a candidate. The offensive line as a whole is a candidate. How about Shane Waldron trying to get the most out of Geno Smith and putting him in advantageous situations? That's going to be a job and a responsibility of Shane Waldron to be able to do that. You could look at Pete Carroll. Can you get your defense right? Yeah. Can you and Ken Norton Jr. get this group together? I think there's a whole bunch of candidates out there that you look at, and if they can have big games, if they can step up in the absence of Russell Wilson, it gives them a chance to win the game on Sunday night.
Some really creative answers here. Some people looking at coordinators, at coaches, at position groups. Some guys looking at Geno Smith himself. Whatever your answer is, I want you to tell us. I'm giving you guys the mic. You're going on air right now, and this is your segment, because I need to know who's got to win this game. Who has to be the guy? Who has to be the guy for the Seahawks to get this done? Here's the number, 206-421-3776. That number again, 206-421-3776. Your calls are next.